As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standig Room Only Podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standig. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Thursday morning, back here in the DMV. Of course, I was in Minnesota for the owners meeting and out in Ashburn on Wednesday for OTAs of the three-day session. The media is allowed out for the one day, and that was yesterday. Going to talk about all of that, the owners meeting, where we are with the Josh Harris bid, or maybe more to the point where we are with Dan Snyder selling, and we'll talk about what we saw out in Ashburn with our pal Nikki Jabala from the Washington Post. And then my other friend, yeah, I only have two, Scott Jackson, of course, one of the voices on the Team 980 and the Commanders post-game radio show. He joined me as well. We thought he was also out there in Ashburn, so we talked a little bit about Eric Bieniemy. We talked about this trademark issue that's popped up for the Commanders. Is this a big deal for them or not? Could this lead to a new name change when the ownership group takes over? And how to talk about the Wizards a little bit. Scott and I talk about the Wizards often on the side. And since they just named a new president of basketball operations, i.e. the general manager, we had to talk about that. Michael Winger is his name. Ted Leonsis may be giving this guy a chance to rebuild. And Scott and I say, well, maybe that's a little too late. But in any event, interesting hire. We'll talk about that here in a moment as well on the Standig Room Only Podcast, which, of course, you can find on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. Also, make sure to subscribe to The Athletic. You will get all my Commanders coverage there. A new story up today. My thoughts on kind of what went down yesterday and sort of comparing OTAs to like the first week of high school. You can check that out on The Athletic. I'm also on Twitter. You can follow me at Ben Standig because as of this moment, on Thursday morning, I have regained control of my Twitter account. It has been a national nightmare over the last few days. It happened on Saturday, right before I was going to the owners meeting. I had to tweet out of my secondary account, which was called at Break Burgundy, because I had a Breaking Burgundy website for many years for a little bit several years ago. I temporarily changed it to my name, but we're gonna put it all back in order because thankfully Twitter has helped me regain control of my account. I'm no longer a crypto investor. I'm just back to being the beat writer for the Commander. So appreciate everybody's patience with that, and I'm glad I could give some comic fodder for my colleagues over the last few days as well. Couple of things. I'll just hit on some of the news of the day, just to sort of put that out here up at the top in terms of the Commanders. So first off, in no particular order, three players did not attend practice: Chase Young, Montez Sweat, Charles Leno. I don't think any of those are like surprising or jarring or anything. I don't even think any of them are necessarily about their contracts, even though Young and Sweater are going to be free agents after this upcoming season. We know Chase Young had his fifth-year option declined. And as far as Leno goes, he's under contract, but he is one of the players who could be extended to lower his cap number. Maybe he's asked to take a pay cut. There's something there, but not like really something there. So I don't think any of these things are about money, would be my guess. And in terms of Leno and Sweat, honestly, I don't think either of them are that big of a deal. The question is, of course, with Chase Young, it is a fascinating situation. Like I said, his first, true activity with the team in a group setting since he had that option declined. It's amazing if Chase Young does not return next week, and this is his last year with the Commanders, he will never have actually been a full participant in an on-field workout during an OTA. 2020, OTAs were canceled because of the pandemic. 2021, he famously skipped. 2022, he's rehabbing from his knee injury, and now this year. We'll talk more about that, I presume, with Nikki in a few minutes, but that's just where we are right now with Chase Young. So take that for what it's worth for the moment. Cam Curl was there. Of course, Cam Curl is another player who is, there's some wonder about a contract going into the last year of his rookie deal. And obviously as a seventh round pick, he's had a pretty, for an NFL player, a pretty, minimal paycheck. So obviously him getting a new deal is a huge life-changing situation. And obviously it's a player you would think the team would look to invest in. That said, I asked Ron Rivera about this yesterday, and he said, look, flat out, everything is on hold when it comes to the money stuff until the ownership situation is resolved. Not surprising, but that is where things are at. And it really did seem like that's where we were after they went through the initial wave of free agency, that everything else was kind of put on hold. No doubt the Josh Harris group will have thoughts on Chase Young and Sweat and Cam Curl and anybody else that they may want to do something with. Doesn't just have to be some of the bigger names. Washington might decide, hey, let's re-up a James Smith Williams right now. Let's not forget about Antonio Gibson, who is a notable name, of course. Could be a Kendall Fuller. It could be others. But right now, it's all on hold until the ownership situation is resolved. So there's that. On the injury front, Rivera opened up his media availability with some not great news. First off, tight end Armani Rogers suffered a non-contact Achilles injury during Monday's practice. I confirmed that he, in fact, tore the Achilles. He'll undergo surgery next week. We don't have a timeline yet, but typically that's going to mean his losing the season. Huge blow, obviously, for the young guy. Feel bad for him. He put in whatever work he put in during the offseason, and now, it's going to feel like it's all gone for not being hurt. But also, Armani Rogers was one of the players I was most intrigued to see this offseason. At this point last year, he was a guy, he was a college quarterback that they were converting. And, we had just gone through the Samus Reyes thing, and not the exact same thing because Samus Reyes had not played football at all, American football at all. And Rodgers had, and Rodgers was a pretty good athlete, but we see about these things. But as the summer progressed, Armani Rogers started becoming a legit threat for them in practices. And then when all the injuries struck that position, he ended up having to play a fair amount last year, at least until like Logan Thomas was able to get back. And I was really intrigued to see where he would go next. And clearly the Commanders were as well, because they passed on adding tight end help this offseason, instead banking on Rogers, Cole Turner, and Curtis Hodges to step up and at least one from that trio step up to be a part of the rotation and maybe the ultimate Logan Thomas replacement. Now it's down to two of those guys, so a big bummer there for Rogers. I would imagine they will add tight end help here at some point in the free agent market, but we'll see. To a degree they have time. They probably just have to do it before training camp. They've got the four right now. You also have Alex Arma, who's like the fullback tight end guy as needed. So we'll see what they do eventually, but a big bummer there. Rivera also said Jamin Davis would be limited right now to basically walkthroughs and team meetings because he had a minor procedure on his knee, minor being Rivera's term, minor procedure on his knee from an issue that was lingering back to the season. Rivera did not say he said he was not concerned about this being a long-term issue. Needless to say, we're all always skeptical when we hear that post Curtis Samuel, but nonetheless, doesn't seem like it's a big deal. If we get to training camp and Jamin Davis is not ready to go, then maybe we have a different conversation. That's where that is for now. Also, John Ridgeway and Andrew Norwell did not practice yesterday, recovering from injuries from the season. I don't think Ridgeway is, again, necessarily a long-term issue. With Norwell, it's a matter of, I mentioned before, that he had an injury from late in the year. He needs to get healthy so he can pass a physical. Once that happens, he most likely will be released. So that is that's where we are on that front. So we'll talk more about some of these things, I'm sure, in a few minutes with Nikki. And Scott and I, as I said, discussed the Eric Bieniemy presence as well. All right, so let's get to it. Here is my conversation with The Washington Post's Nikki Jhabvala here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right. I'm going to go Brent Musburger here and say that I, on my Zoom, am looking live at a person sitting in their car at the Wegmans parking lot to join me here on the podcast. Whatever it takes, that's what she does. Nikki Jhabvala from The Washington Post is joining me here. I've seen you over the last few days in Minnesota for the owners meeting, in Ashburn for OTA, and now at Wegmans. We've hit the triple crown of places to be.
Do you know how many stories I've written from this parking lot? Actually, like, I can remember stories I've written from different spaces within the parking lot. That's how bad it is.
Wow.
That's a sad indictment on me.
If it comes down to that, is there a space you feel has better mojo? Do you want to be near the bustle of the store, or I get towards the back where it's a little quieter, perhaps?
No, well, the front is usually where, like, a lot of the big news happens. So, like, I got, like, the prime spot right now in the lot. It's, like, the very first spot. So this is where a lot of big news goes down. So hopefully they don't sell the team officially while we're doing the Zoom. You never know. You know, Alex Smith's comeback, that happened in this parking lot. I'm trying to think. Darius Geis, that was a different, I think that was the giant food store parking lot.
Wow. All right. Well, look.
Yeah.
That's us a lot. You're here, there, and everywhere. And that's you know, that's what makes you you know, you've got position flex. You can be in this space or that space. Doesn't matter, you'll get the job done.
Exactly.
All right. Well, look, we've got a lot to get to. It's been a busy week. We're going to get to the football stuff, because honestly, I'd rather almost talk about that, because I think we're all kind of a little over the owner stuff. But that is the bigger story. So let's start there, if you're good with that. And I came up with this analogy. I warned you that I had one. I don't know if it's any good, but we'll see what you think. Here's my view on this is. Okay, so, like, obviously the NBA playoffs are going on right now. And we've all been in this situation, whether you are the person watching or waiting for somebody who is watching a game. Like, you might say, hey, we're going to meet up after this game. Hey, how much time is left in the game? 5 minutes. Okay, so what's, like, 10 or 15 minutes in real time? I'll meet you at your place or something? Sure, except we know how the playoffs go. Even though the clock says it's almost over, we know, really any NBA game, but the playoffs in particular, there will be more fouls called in the last few minutes because teams, maybe they have to foul to, you know, stop the clock. There will be all the coaches, if they have three or four timeouts left, they're using them all. Because why let them go if you have a chance? You got to look, it's, you know, looks good to use your timeouts, like you're in the game. There's the reviews. Oh, Lord, there's so many reviews. And now the 10 to 15 minute outcome is now 30 minutes, even though the clock still says this thing is almost over. This is how I view this sale. Like, months ago, it may have looked like we were those 5 minutes left. And that led people to saying, this is over. But in the reality, a lot of I's to dot, T's to cross, and in this case, limited partners to vet, and it is taking forever. And while that is incredibly frustrating for many people, ourselves included, the reality is that it wasn't 5 minutes left in the game because you were ignoring the reviews and the timeouts and the fouls. And that's why we're still here in May, 2 months after everybody went crazy saying this thing was over in mid-March, and that then it was going to be over at the first owners meeting, et cetera, et cetera. And now we got Jim Irsay, the Colts owner, saying week one is a goal. So that's my analogy, that the people are looking at the clock and ignoring what actually happens in the last 5 minutes of a game.
Yes, I would say this, though, is that, you know, it hasn't taken that long by NFL standards. I think this one has just played out more publicly. Everybody's following every single step. Like, there wasn't this in-depth reporting with the Broncos sale or even the Panthers sale after all that stuff with Jerry Richardson. This one, because of the owner, because of the team, because of everything that's happened over the last 24 years, and especially the last 3 years, it's become magnified. And this sale in particular is interesting because it's unlike the others. I mean, this is a $6 billion sale. I mean, it's massive. And they don't have a buyer with the liquidity that they had with the Walton family or Tepper. So it's a more complicated deal. Now, thinking that it was going to get done in March was a stretch from the start. I mean, they announced that they were exploring potential transactions, not even that they were selling, that they were exploring potential transactions in December. So that would have been a 4 month turnaround, which has never happened in the NFL. And that's discounting all the complexities of this deal. I think the problem was the perception of what an agreement really is in this case. You know, first they orally agreed to terms, then they signed off, which was really just, that wasn't a hey, the deal is finalized, we agree on every little detail. It's no, we're going to open this window of exclusivity so we can continue negotiating over these smaller details and not have to worry about other bidders. They got themselves exclusivity, the Harris Group, basically.
Wasn't that basically, what do the kids say? It's like going, when you're in a relationship and you go,
going steady.
Yeah, you're going IG.
IG official, yeah.
Yeah.
You're going steady, you're IG official, you announce on Facebook, basically.
Right.
God, I'm aging myself and mentioning Facebook. I didn't say MySpace, though, so that's good. But that's really what it was. It wasn't, hey, it's over, it's done, it's finalized. No. It certainly headed that way. And what's interesting, again, about this one is there's no other clear bid that could really rival it. There's no Bezos, unless something falls apart and he suddenly becomes interested again. It's just this deal. So they're going to get it done, I think, but it's just not there yet. And to say that it's not final is not a criticism. It's not a knock on the Harris Group. It's not a negative anything. It's just the reality. They're still working through some things because it's a complex deal. And there are some things that the NFL is going to have to concede on given their strict ownership policies. But that's where it is. And they're still kind of haggling over some details. Hopefully they, both sides, figure those out. Because, again, you got to remember, it's not just the agreement between the Harris Group and Dan Snyder. The NFL has to sign off on it, too. So there's that third party. And that third party is kind of, that's somewhat of the holdup is, you know, the NFL has to sign off on it. And certain things with Dan, too, have to be finalized. So it's complex.
It is complex for sure. It was interesting, I thought. I don't know your view, because I was, you know, we were out in, as I said, out in Minnesota, Eagan, Minnesota, to be precise, for the owners meeting. And this is a much smaller version of the owners meeting. There's only about, I don't know, 20 or so reporters there. Whereas at the one back in March, every beat has several reporters there because you're also getting the coaches and things like that. So it's a more intimate group. And I guess to that extent, we had better access to the owners, I would say. I don't know if you agree, but I would sort of in general. They were penned in more, I guess you could say.
It was a good setup.
Yeah, it was a good setup. And so we got to talk to a few of them, primarily Jim Irsay and Jerry Jones. They're the talkers there, but some others as well. And it was interesting. Every time we would ask where things at with the deal, the focus was always, to me, primarily on the Harris bid as opposed to whatever Dan Snyder may or may not be asking for. And then you guys at the Post wrote a story, I guess it was the last day we were there, saying that from what you're gathering, it really isn't. Dan Snyder is not really pushing for too much at this point. He's like, oh, let's just get this deal done.
Well, he was at one point during, he wrote that story, I think it was like before the start of the combine, that he, you know, there was, he was hoping for indemnification, not just from Harris's group, but from the league and other owners as well. But they've moved, they've worked through a lot of it.
Right. Right.
That's
Right. And so that's what was interesting. So I think on some weird level, that is actually a sign of progress, because I really thought that the holdup was going to be more on Dan Snyder asking for whatever, you know, less of the Mary Jo White report being released or more indemnification or what have you. If it is quote unquote just about the money, then okay, you think at some point they'll figure out a way to get this done, even though the owners are saying right now they're not going to change. They're not looking to change the debt limit rules or the amount of money that the main partner has to put into this, and that seems to be a bit of the rub. What that to me is also interesting. Is this any kind of a game of chicken between Josh Harris and the league, knowing he does have them a little bit over the barrel because they want to get rid of Dan Snyder? And like you said, there is no obvious other bidder. They would have to start over again, and that would seem nightmarish. On the other hand, you know, the NFL owners are the, you know, most powerful dudes in the world. So at least they think so, and they may not be wrong. They're not going to, like, you know, change everything for this one guy. So I do think it'll be interesting to see what happens. Agreed, it will eventually get done, it appears. But at the same point, it's a little interesting standoff that I sort of took away from this last couple of days.
No, I totally agree. And I think, like, one person said to us, like, he got the sense that Dan really wants to get this done, that he really wants to sell, which when you think, you know, even 6 months ago, that seems unfathomable, you know, that he's really wants to move on from owning this team. That to me is big. You know, you can chalk it up to, well, yeah, he's selling it, the team, but still that's big.
Yeah, no, I'm sure assuming you read my story, when the day after the day that they announced a week or so ago that they were going to, that they had reached the, you know, IG official status, that I said, I think it's okay for people to celebrate here, not because the deal is done, but because for the first time, Dan Snyder has acknowledged out loud that he is selling. And that to me was a big step. Whether how long it takes for them to finish up the rest, we will see. What are you more excited about as a reporter? That the Dan Snyder era would be ending / something new is happening with ownership, or that we can just literally stop discussing this topic because it is it has reached the crazy town part where you have these, you know, I don't even want to mention the name of the other party who is trying to get involved and he's now suing people and all that stuff. And then, like, it's just the constant reporting. This is the most incremental reporting situation, but that leads to so many people just putting out all kinds of stuff. And it's such minutiae at this point. What are you more excited about, the end of that part of the reporting, or just the fact that Snyder is out and it would be a new group in town?
I'm probably more excited about the end of the circus. I love the chase of covering any news story, and this one is so nuanced and there's so many layers. I mean, as a reporter, that part is fun. It's all consuming, but it's fun to learn about new things too. Like, you know, I know so much more about private equity than I did before, you know, like,
yeah.
That to me is fun, but yeah, I'm I wouldn't mind like a Saturday where I could just like hang out with my dogs or go to a brewery and just chillax. That sounds nice.
Well,
Haven't had one in a while.
and that said, that's the one part of the sort of the bummer out of what came out of this weekend was the fact that there is no timeline here. Everybody's like, relax, relax, but I can't tell you when it's going to get done. And, you know, I think, look, for the football team, the training, when training camp ends in a couple of weeks, that's the part where, okay, everybody goes away for a while. When Jim Irsay says we would potentially have a special meeting to vote on this, but it would be sometime after July 4th. That's because even they're saying, look, we're out of here. We're going away for a while. Don't bother us. You know, one, two, three, Cancun, but we'll be back, you know? But everybody's sort of stuck here in this holding pattern until we know for sure when this deal is done. And that is frustrating for everybody involved.
Yeah, I mean, when you're covering it, you just kind of feel tethered to whatever's happening. Like, I would love to go back to Denver and see my family. I actually haven't been back to Denver since I left Denver in 2020. I went, they had the
They played a
then
game there.
football team. Yes. I was there for like all of like 36 hours for that game, but that's the only time I've been back home. So I would love to go back to Denver. I'm just too scared while this is pending. You know, like I know as soon as I get on a plane, something is going to happen. That's so I'm staying here until they get it done.
I can see the report, you know, headline, Woman takes down flight headed to Denver because on air Wi-Fi doesn't work. Tells captain turn plane around.
Nothing gives me more anxiety than Wi-Fi that doesn't work on an airplane anymore. I can't handle it. Like my stomach starts hurting, I start sweating. Like it is a real thing. First world
Oh,
problems.
by the way, I mentioned this in the intro that I already recorded. But speaking of like fretting over things like that, I have some breaking news here for you.
Oh,
My
do
Twitter
tell.
account is back under control of the Standard
Oh,
Corporation.
standing back.
I can't
What
change
are
my
you going to
avatar.
do with yourself? Oh
You
my
know
God,
that.
this car's gonna hit me. Oh my God. Jesus. Don't you hate when people back up and they don't look behind them and they're practically like within millimeters of hitting you?
Yeah, I did a podcast once in Richmond with Matt Paris and Steve Wino in my car, and the entire time a car was trying to parallel park right in front of us. I think Wino was driving, and the car was parked. So we were discussing while we were constantly watching to see if this guy was about to hit Wino's car on multiple occasions. It's very it can be stressful.
It is. But back to your Twitter account. That's very exciting. Happy for you.
Thank you. I still can't change my avatar photo where we have to wait for them to do that. Then I will tell the world, but I'm giving you the sneak preview right now.
Wow.
Yeah. So
Wow.
big, big,
Appreciate
big,
this.
yeah, big news. All right. So because of that, I've been tweeting out less these days. Maybe people think it's a good thing. I don't know. I'm waiting for the stick to crypto tweets once I start tweeting about football again.
You
But
should like mess with everybody and still like put out the random crypto tweets every now and then.
maybe I should.
Actually, don't. I have you on notification, so I don't want to get
All right, fair enough. So
change my mind. Anything that
because of that, I was pretty I was sparingly tweeting about the team yesterday at practice, but things did happen. I'm going to save us both this. We are not going to discuss, unless if you want to, you're more than welcome to. This is a free country, but I'm not going to task us with having to say how player X, Y, or Z looked yesterday. It's one of 3 days of an OTA in which they weren't even playing like 11 on 11, no pads. You know, it's just the very basics. They're literally teaching them over again. Okay, here's how you block. Okay, so I'm not going to go crazy, except for one player, and that would, of course, would be Sam Howell. To whatever degree you were focused on him, or what did you observe? I thought the most interesting part was them trying to get him to be the leader, not just really of the offense, but of the team. I don't know if you saw the video, but there was a video of Ron ha having the team circle together, huddle together, and then he ha has Sam Howell say, you know, basically, you know, go team, you know, in front of everybody. That's the type of thing I think that stood out to me. But for you, Sam Howell, what were your initial thoughts seeing him yesterday?
I thought we just said we weren't gonna
That was the
analyze
one
specific
guy. I
players.
said, you gotta talk about the quarterback.
Yeah. No, I mean, I thought he looked fine. I mean, to me, this is, to me, it's kind of a difficult time to really evaluate players because it's, they're throwing against mostly air, you know. I think they went 4-on-4 at one point, 7-on-7, 11-on-11 briefly.
Well,
They're experimenting with different players at different positions still at this point, but I thought he looked fine. You know, I think people get hung up on, oh my God, he was picked off by Percy Butler, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I he seemed comfortable back there. He seemed to have a good command. See what I did there?
I did.
Of the huddle. Had a good rhythm with his receivers, I thought. Yeah, I thought he looked fine. I mean, I want to see him enjoying training camp practices. You know, I want to see him in training camp contact when things are a little bit more live, but mostly enjoying training camp practices.
Yeah, I mean,
Right now, I mean, everybody's just getting a feel for each other.
my biggest thing is like he looks comfortable. Like, I mean, he doesn't look out of whack standing out there with those guys. He doesn't look like he's overwhelmed or that he's nervous. I mean, obviously he played at a, you know, pretty, you know, good sized program in college. He had a lot of attention. You know, he went through this a little bit last year, so it's not completely new to him. So I think to me that's a big
Right.
thing. But yeah, I mean, look, I think his arm looked pretty good in the short to intermediate stuff. Didn't go downfield a ton. But again, it doesn't really matter per se. So I think that's going to be just interesting to see how he continues to develop as a leader. Because it isn't just, that's the thing with that position. It's not just go out and do your job. You actually have to be the guy the players rally around. That's why Taylor Heinicke was so fun in part for these guys, because he was somebody you could rally around, and maybe other quarterbacks, they did not. I think for me, like, a lot of it's like instinct. I would like look around at different groups and think, oh, but yeah, that looks like a pretty good group. Like the secondary is a lot of interesting options. And then I
Yep.
get to like the offensive line. I'm like, I don't know
Yeah.
about this. I mean, Charles Leno wasn't there, and that's fine. I don't think that's a huge deal, but you know, I just still, I keep looking at the line going, I know Rivera and the crew thinks they've done a better job, and who's for me? Who am I to say that they didn't? I'm just not that inspired by that. And if you can tell me whatever you want about Howell and McLaurin and Robinson and everybody else, if that line
Yep.
isn't legit better, I don't know where we're going anywhere. But that's the part of the group that kind of gave me anxiety yesterday.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it all starts up front. I like Nick Gates. I think, I mean, I heard the good things about him from New York. I think he can be a really intriguing add. I'm still concerned about the right tackle spot. I mean, I think that's become an ever more important position. I mean, it's always been important, but I think increasingly it's become even more important. I'm curious to see if they stick with using Sam Cosmi inside. I mean, it kind of seemed like that was where they were going with him. Near the end of last season, was pushing him inside and then figuring out something on the tackle position. But I have Cornelius Lucas, but is it completely solidified? I'm also worried about the depth. I don't get the sense that they have a ton of it. And every year for the past 3 years, they've practically gone to the very bottom of the depth chart because of injuries across the line. So, I mean, I expect this group to change multiple times over throughout the off season, especially as guys get cut, as you know, they'll probably scour the waiver wire like they always do, bring in some new guys. So I'm curious to see what they do there. But yeah, I agree with you. It's not the most inspiring group. I mean, but then again, their O-line a couple years ago wasn't either, and it held up really well, I thought. So
Well,
I think a lot of it has to do with coaching and then, you know, just, you know, the same messaging, and hopefully they can get that done. The structure of the coaching that was also interesting, but also raises questions too, you know, like Kenny Zampezi working primarily with tight ends yesterday while Juan Castillo is helping primarily with the offensive line. Trevell Wharton is expected to be promoted to offensive line coach, but they got, you know, some of the more veteran coaches in sort of these hybrid roles, which is interesting. Curious if it will work.
Well, to connect this with the Wizards conversation I'm going to have later in the podcast, the NBA now, the general manager is actually the president of basketball operations, and the general manager is actually the assistant general manager. That's what I think is going to happen with the offensive line. They're going to make Tre'Vell Wharton the offensive line coach, but really Juan Castillo, who was a renowned offensive line coach, is probably going to be more of the offensive line coach, but Tre'Vell Wharton will deal with the day-to-day stuff, and Castillo will deal with, you know, fine tuning, and also he'll be like the run game coordinator, I think, that type of deal. So, but that
was very similar to the front office where they have like two GMs and a few others who have been assistant GMs and kind of a muddied lot of people with, say, doing different things type deal. Sounds efficient.
Does sound efficient. Very, very good. I'm sure Josh Harris will see it as such. All right, lastly, so I can let you get back to your Wegmansing. Chase Young, by law, we have to discuss him. So he's not there. Now, again, neither is Montez Sweat, neither was Charles Leno. Reminder, these are voluntary practices, and they really do have like close to 100% attendance. A lot of teams don't have that. So overall, they're doing fine, but these people are not there. Charles Leno's a veteran. I don't think it's a big deal. Montez Sweat, I guess if you really want to make a stink and say he's going into a contract year, it's because of that. I don't think that's what this is. I think he just didn't go. But Chase Young's the most interesting one, of course. I said this earlier. The fact that if he skips the rest of OTAs this year, and this is his last year, he will never have participated in one single on-field OTA as a member of this organization is pretty nuts. The question is it a big deal that he isn't there? I'm almost of the nature to say it's not, because it isn't his nature to skip these, and this is what he does. I just don't want to hear anymore that he's like the captain or that he's like a leader, because if you're going to claim that, you got to show up. You got to go do these things. That's how teams get better. Your best players show up, lead, and everybody else follows. Other than that, look, as long as he's doing the workouts, I'm not going to make it a big deal about it, but I don't want to hear about the leader stuff anymore.
It only matters if he doesn't produce. If he produces, this is a non-storyline, you know, and it'll always come up in hindsight, you know, just as it has in the past couple of years. You know, granted, he was dealing with the injury, but, you know, if you produce, nobody cares whether you were there in OTAs or not. If you don't produce, it'll come up and it'll haunt you. So it's more of a risk on his part of how do you want to play this, you know? The Montez part, I mean, he's proved himself much more than Chase has. I think the outside perception, and this is not to say it's necessarily the reality with Chase Young, but I think the outside perception is that, you know, in some ways he's resting on the laurels of his rookie season, you know, when he was voted to a Pro Bowl and Defensive Rookie of the Year, and really hasn't done anything much since. He's dealt with the injury, of course, and missed quite a bit of time, which is unfortunate for him. But, you know, you want to see that he's putting in the same type of work to come back. And this is not to say that he isn't necessarily, but, you know, that's what people want to see, that you're involved, that, you know, you're working your butt off to come back. And, you know, this is everything to you, because they have invested quite a bit in him. And I do think it's interesting that, you know, the team, and rightfully so, you know, they continue to use Daron Payne as an example of what could happen. You know, Daron struggled to finish in his first 4 years, didn't get the extension that he wanted. They did exercise his fifth year, but they didn't give him a longer term extension like he wanted. He goes, figures out how to finish more, get the numbers, balls out, and gets a massive payday. And I think it's a perfect example for the staff to show Chase and Montez, you know, this is what can happen if you put in the work and you figure out how to get these numbers and you put, you know, the game first. So we'll see if they do it. I think Montez is a more polished pass rusher, more experienced pass rusher at this point. His numbers have been better. He's proven himself more. You know, I believe he's down in Colorado training with Chase Young. I'm curious to see if he'll be back at OTAs at any point. But certainly the spotlight is on Chase. He was picked number two overall. He was propped up as, you know, a generational type pass rusher. And those are lofty expectations for any player to live up to. And he had a really good rookie season, but it's kind of been a struggle for him since. So I think it's kind of up to him on, you know, how much he wants the OTAs thing to matter. It comes down to production.
You know, this is why Chase Young made the mistake. It's like, you know, whether you're, you know, in a new job or in a relationship, you want to start slow. You want to lower the expectations and then improve. Then they're impressed. Even if you ultimately get, you know, to the same level you would have gotten at if you got hard right off the bat. Just, you know, go up. You want the trend to go up, not start hot and then like, eh, I'm good, and then go backwards. That was the first tactical mistake.
Yeah, I learned that. I knew that right off. That's why it took me like 12 years to get here.
Oh, so I'm still the slow burn here. That's gonna be my that's my life nickname, slow burn. All right, that's a weird thing. All right. I've only signed you to a 30-minute contract, so your time is about up. At Nikki Jhabvala, NikiJhabvala on Twitter. Her account is authentic. No crypto advice from her, unless you have some. I'm unaware of her interest in that. Anything else to mention, to plug? Anything else?
Might have a story out later this week. But otherwise, no, not really. I mean, I'll try to refrain from posting too many dog photos on Instagram. If you follow me on Instagram, just be warned that it's for my dogs. I don't post anything of value or note. But hey, follow me anyway. Other than that, yeah, I don't really have much. Maybe they'll sell the team soon. Wouldn't that be nice?
I was thinking if Nikki and I had our own site together, we would have the least promoted site ever, because both of us would downplay every single thing that we do. And we'd be like, yeah, if you could read it if you want. If you don't, that's fine. I mean, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. That's how we roll. We make podcast magic every time. All right. Go Wegmaning. Have fun on your errands, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, here's for a little more about Commanders OTAs. And the guy I go to when I got a vent about the Wizards is the great Scott Jackson, of course, Team 980 and the Commanders post-game show at Jackson Sports on Twitter. All right, we'll get to the Wizards news in a minute, Scott, about their hiring a new president of basketball everything. But first, you were out at out in Ashburn with me yesterday. Just give me your big takeaway, whatever it was, something that stood out to you one way or the other about being out there.
Well, I just think the Eric Bieniemy stuff is as advertised. He's definitely vocal. There's a tempo that he expects from his offense in and out of the huddle. There's some Kansas City Chiefy kind of things, you know, that you'll see when the team is revealed, I think, in terms of the way they're running stuff. And, you know, Sam Howell, you just kind of thinking back to last season where this team was in the quarterback room with QB1 to where they are now, was certainly a lot more accurate than Carson Wentz was in the early days of OTAs and training camp. But, you know, he had some struggles too. He threw an interception in the red zone. He's that portion of the field seemed to be a bit of his kryptonite on the day, because I think early on he was really hot in some of these drills, but then, you know, things tighten up down there and it's really essentially just a 4-on-4. DBs against receivers, what have you. And that's, you know, the linemen are window dressing at these practices right now. That's why it's kind of funny that three linemen, you know, skipped out, because they're really not a whole lot for them to do outside of individuals at this point, because there's no pads on. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's some good things to see from Hal, but I think it's a work in progress, certainly. And again, I think people can be encouraged by there is a method to what Eric Bieniemy wants, and hopefully these guys can catch up to it, you know, sooner rather than later.
It is funny, almost like, you know, we when it comes to like Del Rio, we talk, you know, Del Rio is like he's like a man out there. He's not going to take anybody's crap. And it's Del Rio scares me, I'm not going to lie, a little bit. but he's like fairly subdued out there. Like he's not a screamer. Now, you know, maybe there's pockets, but we don't really hear him that much. And I've said this before with Scott Turner. Scott Turner has a very different personality than these guys. But Bieniemy is loud and out there, and he's really a presence. So it is interesting to see it, and you know, it'll be interesting over time. You know, right now it's the Kumbaya part of the off-season program. Everybody's just happy to be there.
Right.
You know,
every team feels this, right? Like every team, you're not hearing anybody going, oh my God, this is the worst practices we've ever had. You're not going to hear any of that this time of year. And I think last year, remember, we heard all this stuff too, Ben, about how positive everything was too, but you're right. But there's just a different vibe about the staff, which they haven't had the first 3 years just because of him being out there.
Correct. All right. So a quick other note here, obviously we're all waiting for the Josh Harris sale to conclude or progress or something, you know, one of the questions of course is what are some of the priorities he's going to have when he takes over. One thing that a lot of people want that I don't think is a top priority is changing the name or the brand or whatever, and we'll have that debate what they should do over time. But yesterday, meaning on Wednesday, came news that and I don't have the exact tweet in front of me, but basically there's some hiccup right now with the Commanders trade with trademarking the Commanders for this team. When you see that and you know what goes on with this organization, everybody immediately is like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. Now they can't even be the Commanders. Like what's going, can't even be the Commanders. Like what's going on here? I did get a statement from the team though, Scott, that said, the trademark office's recent non-final office action, say that fast three times, is an ordinary course step in the standard trademark registration process. We will respond to the trademark office's office action and are confident that our registration will be issued. I think this is probably much ado about nothing. I'm needless to say, not a trademark attorney. We'll see, but it's some other things I saw the same thing. Nonetheless, How hilarious. I mean, this is just where everything happens with this group. And like I said, this might be normal, but because it's this group, of course, it seems like it's a major screw up.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Do the Guardians have any issues? I'm trying to think of the new name teams, right? I don't understand it either. You know, this is just probably going to give oxygen to the change the name folks, right? Like, good, you know, you can't profit from it. Move on, pick another name. But here's the problem. Like these squatters have sat on a lot of the names that have been out there for a while, right? Like this one guy that's sitting on probably Red Wolves and all these other variations of the name that we heard about. I don't know. I mean, yeah, like you said, I think it's just more of a, oh man, just it doesn't seem like this group can catch a break kind of stuff. And you know, when you do the making of the brand, I think part of the you know, part of that too is obviously, you know, there was some discussion right when you did the name change, I should say, when you said you were stripping it down and you were going to Washington Football for the temporary time period. There were all these people jumping in, you know, trying to guess names and all that kind of stuff, and I guess jumping in the squatting world. So I don't know how much of a deterrent that's been, how hard that whole thing's been, or if it's really just more about this football game they play. You know, I don't know what exactly it is that's holding it up. Hopefully it gets resolved for them. I mean, I would think the powers of the NFL and, you know, of a multi-billion dollar corporation could probably, you know, get this through at some point. I would be shocked if this was something that dragged out. It was a major problem.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to make a process joke every time we talk about this team and now that Josh Harris is about to take over, but it feels like this is part of the process.
Part of the process, yes.
But, yeah, but I do agree. This is going to give oxygen, like I said, to the group that wants it out. And maybe for Josh Harris, even to some degree, if he actually does want to make a change, there's something here. Like, hey, you know, we hit a road bump. Of course, like you said, what would you change it to? I don't have to go through that deal. I did a whole story 2 years ago where we you know, did like a, you know, test run of like what it would take to change the name. And like, you know, if it really comes to that, we'll get back into it. But it's just notable that happened. We'll see where this goes. That would be almost funny if like the name gets reversed, like, you know, if you're like Jason Wright, you're like, okay, that was like the big thing, like what happened here. Although it would give them opportunity to redo the reveal, because that was the most uninspiring reveal on the Today Show of all time.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, and again, as you and I discussed over and over, I don't think there is a one particular name that's going to make everybody happy. I do feel like a lot of this name change push is from people that never wanted a name change. as well in terms of our fan base and even some media, which is fine. I get that. But it's just like there's just no easy way and happy way to resolve this thing. I must think you need to ride it out and just, you know, improve your organization and hopefully win and try it on for size with winning. And I've said over and over, it's not even the most frustrating local mascot name that belongs to the NBA franchise.
Right, for sure. So, yeah, good segue to the NBA franchise.
Thank you.
This is why you're a radio professional. Yeah. So look, I gotta veer into the Wizards here a little bit because they made some significant news on Wednesday with the announcement that they have hired Michael Winger to be president of basketball ops for Monumental. Now, let me just clear up the titles here get confusing. So let me explain. In basketball now, there's the actual general manager, and the way that we think about it, the person that's in charge of all the moves is not actually called the general manager. That person is the president of basketball operations. That's what Michael Winger is. He will then subsequently hire a general manager. And you can already see the framing coming out of the Wizards that, oh, well, this person will be solely focused on the basketball while Michael will oversee the Wizards and the Mystics and the Go-Go and give me a break. None of that's going to happen. He is in charge of the Wizards. Now, nominally, is he in charge of the other things? Sure. And the Go-Go is obviously connected to the Wizards, but he's not going to be focusing on, you know, the Wizard or the Go-Go's, you know, travel schedule to you know, whatever their next game is, or you know, in Schenectady, if there's even a team there. I don't know.
Sounds cool though.
So this is the guy who is the new GM with the title Monument of basketball, president of basketball ops for Monumental Basketball. Here's the deal. Look, I always say this all the time. With any time you hire somebody who's at the assistant level to take the main job, none of us have a clue what he will do or how he will do, but get some insight as to what he's about. And he's not a traditional basketball person. He's a lawyer. When I asked somebody with the Clippers a few weeks ago, when his name first came up as an interview, as a candidate, I was told that in a text, he's very good, an expert with the cap, and really good with trades. Very smart. The same person, after they made the hire, said to me, great hire. We'll get their cap in order quickly. Nothing wrong with having smart people around. It is somebody who is outside of the Ernie Grunfeld tree. So that was what Ted wanted to do. Fine. Start fresh from there. So that is all interesting. We'll get into a couple other things in a sec, but at first blush, thoughts on the hire?
Well, last week, I heard about this Michael Winger thing. And of course, immediately my eighth grade self started thinking about Kip Winger and, you know, headed for a heartbreak. She's only 17. Easy come, easy go. So all these terrible Winger jokes.
I can't believe you know the songs. I mean,
of course I do. I was a product of the hair band era.
Well, so was I. But I mean, like,
and remember this, really the thing that ruined poor Winger, I kind of feel bad for them.
Yeah.
Was Beavis and Butthead, because they were the joke of Beavis and Butthead, right? Like their friend Stewart, the nerdy kid, wore the Winger t-shirt, and it became a joke on Beavis and Butthead because
I forget which one. One of them wore an AC/DC, one wore Metallica, because that were the cool bands. And then the nerdy kid was Winger.
Yeah, the nerdy kid was Winger. And he's like, ah, these guys suck. And they would do that over and over when they come on. And it was anyway. So again, my eighth, ninth grade self, maybe I was a little older. I don't remember now. Anyway, I always think about that. But yes, once I got past that, I started diving into this guy. Look, the Sam Presti tree is, you know, can be impressive, right? A guy who's worked in a market where, you know, stars don't always want to stick around. And then you've been able to flip those things into obviously asset allocation and rebuilds. So I think that part of it's interesting. But, you know, what's fascinating to me when you first think of the Clippers, do you really think about a team that's been like amazing with the draft and been really shrewd with like a development of young players? Or do you think more about a team that's been star chasing, which, they did. And you read, you know, some of these stories, some of these accounts of this guy, he was down on the idea of trading for Paul George, which they gave up a ton for. He didn't really like that idea. You know, again, who knows if that's true or not, but this is what they're saying now. He was loud about that and Clippers, but apparently Lawrence Frank and company didn't listen to him. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think there's some interesting things to his background. But I think I'm with the bigger picture is it's a fresh set of eyes. It's different Will he be allowed the autonomy to do all these things? That's what they're saying right now. I hope that's true. If he wants to, you know, utter the word rebuild, will they allow that to happen? Tank, however you want to put it, will they allow that all to happen? Hopefully so. But it's going to be tough. It's still, you could say you want to do all that. What are you going to get for two guys that are coming up with their contracts? If you do sign and trades with them, you're usually not going to get a whole hell of a lot. You know, what are you going to get for Bradley Beal if you were to be able to somehow move that albatross?
Well, hard to
see much value there, to be honest with you.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. So while the hire seems interesting, you know, time will tell. Okay. This is in the story on The Athletic about this. It says, the story, it reads, Leontis plans to give winger wide latitude to expand and revamp the Wizards infrastructure and potentially launch a full rebuild of the roster, said league sources. Okay, you've got to be freaking kidding me. This will sound like a great deal and people will be excited for it.
Yeah.
And this is this is perfect hashtag so Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
We've been screaming to do this 2 years or for the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always said, other people have a different timeline, but I always said at the moment they traded Russell Westbrook, in which they didn't give up anything, got back a bunch of fun assets with Kyle Kuzma and KCP and some other stuff. That was the moment to trade Bradley Beal. Not because Bradley Beal was a bad player, but because it was a chance to restart the whole thing. You want to change the culture? I talked to somebody recently who's very familiar with the Wizards, and we talked about them, and he agreed with that. Like, they've got to change that culture. Well, you're not changing the culture as long as the people from the past part of the culture were still there, and that's Bradley Beal. And I'm not saying Bradley Beal is like a bad guy. I'm just saying that you have to start over. It's trading him now, you're going to get 50 cents on the dollar compared to what you could have gotten multiple first round picks and some young players a couple of years ago. Now he has one of the worst contracts, maybe the worst contract in the entire NBA. So again, this is great. And also, by the way, you also pass on trading Kyle Kuzma at the trade deadline.
Oh, which is unforgivable. I'm sorry. That was the worst thing. Maybe, but you know what? I mean, maybe they tried to, and it just wasn't what we thought it would be. I don't know. But that seemed like the moment of the second miss. Like, you talked about the first miss with Beal right after the Wall deal, right? Like, this was the moment to go in that. I felt like this year when you saw that this group of, you know, I hesitate to call them big three. My friend Rick Doc Walker and I laugh every time we say it. The quote, big three, break them up. That would have been the moment to do it and to see what you could get out there fetching the open market. But, you know, never got to that point. You know, here we are. Like, so everything you're trading, you're going to be trading on a bad exchange rate, clearly. But if the goal is to clear it out and start it over, I guess you're just going to have to take the deal. They're going to have to take bad contracts. They're going to have to take some things, you know, that's how they're going to have to get out of this. If that's truly what they're going to do. I could see a scenario where he comes in and says, all right, we thought about it, but the best thing to do is to add, you know, and just give it another year for West Jr., you know, and go from there. But that's, you know, we'll see. I mean, this guy will have to have some amazing relationships around the league, which they say he does, to kind of change the mindset of you know, free agents, players out there have never forced trades the Wizards in our lifetime. Or said, oh, this is the place I'm going to go in free agency either. I mean, what are the big free agent moments of the Wizards? Like, Arenas was a low level, you know, he was a restricted. They got him, that they nailed it, you know, but it was also like kind of fluky because it was a weird year. Like, it was literally them and the Clippers, the only teams that could have afforded him at the time. He says he flipped a coin, which then he said he didn't flip a coin. Then he said he did flip a coin, and then he didn't flip a coin. Whatever happened there. But I mean, remember, you know, the biggest free agent moment almost was Al Horford. Remember that? Al Horford was down to Boston and Washington, and his wife wanted to go to Boston, so they went to Boston.
Well, and everything went downhill from that point.
And, I mean, and basically, everything went in the crapper, right?
Right after that. I don't even know what to say. That's why I've been saying for a while now that this is the worst point for the Wizards since basically guns in the locker room, because there is no obvious path. At least when you had the Blatch, JaVale, Nick Young nonsense, at least it was going towards the bottom, and they ended up obviously getting those picks that turned into Wall and Beal and others, and that helped the turnaround. Right now, there's no, I don't know what their hope is. Even if you trade Bradley Beal, again, you're not getting close to what you could have gotten before. It's not like they have somebody on the roster currently. You're going, well, at least they have this potential centerpiece.
Young player. Yeah, they don't have a young centerpiece player at all. No, I mean, they got a guy, you know, their first draft pick last year, oh my God, was, you know, literally like was a disaster until like the final 2 weeks of the season. We don't even know if that's going to carry over. So, I mean, you're right. I mean, they don't have a lot. Then we've just watched playoffs where, you know, people you traded away shined for Western Conference Finals teams.
Well, I think I told you, my buddy texted me the other day and said that the team that helped the Nuggets and the Lakers get to the Western Conference Finals the most was the Wizards, because Absolutely. They traded Rui Hachimura and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
That's a good point.
I know you got to run. At Jackson Sports on Twitter. You're going to be on the local radio when? This weekend?
Yeah, Friday on Overtime at 6:30 on 106.7 The Fan, and Sunday morning 8 to 11 on 106.7 The Fan and Team 980. And then I guess Monday, Memorial Day, 2 to 6 with Doc Walker in for Grant and Danny from 2 to 6.
Awesome. All right, we'll go check Scott there. He'll have more thoughts for sure on Commanders and the Wizards. My guy, enjoy the rest of the day. We'll talk soon.
All right, thanks, Ben.